stone.
Okay, welcome everybody to an extraordinary meeting of Parish Council being held on Monday the 2nd of July. And the topic of the agenda is to receive a pre-application presentation from TTP PLC on proposals to grow Melbourne Science Park, creating a purpose-built office and research accommodation. First of all then, Madam Assistant Clerk, do we have apologies for absence?
Yes, apologies from Councillors Cowley and Sherwin for personal reasons, and County Councillor Van Ven and District Councillor Hart for work reasons.
Okay, thank you. PC 04718, to receive any declarations of interest and requests for dispensations. Do any councillors want to declare an interest? No councillors are declaring an interest. In that case, we will move on to PC 4818. So we have people from TTP here, and we also have people involved with drawing up the plans. So between them, they will be able to answer all of your questions. So if you wouldn't mind introducing yourselves, first of all, tell us a little bit about TTP, what it does, how long it's been in the village, and then we'll move on to the actual application.
I will give you a short introduction first, then Sam will go through about TTP history and what have you. But I'm Steve Pritchard, I work for TTP, I'm the property advisor to the group. And I think I just wanted to say thank you for the opportunity to give a presentation first of all, because we very much want to take on board your comments and sort of feelings as public and councillors. I've been here for about 18 months. I've joined TTP because I was excited by the proposal, because this isn't a developer, this is a company that wants to do something for its own purposes and its own expansion, so it's slightly different from people I've worked with before. And the way we're going to tackle today, we've got three speakers, which is Sam Hyde, who's the Managing Director and Board Member of the TTP Group, who will give you a bit about TTP and how long we've been, the aspirations, how long we've been there. Then we've got the architect, Shep Robson, which is David Arnold, and we've got Giles Carr, the landscape and the ecology, because the building and the surrounds are very important to us, so that each of those speak. But we do have members from the team, so if there's any technical questions which I can pass the ball to, we will do so quickly. And we've also got an exhibition on the 10th of July in the same forum. So if somebody wants to sort of more questions, look around in more detail, 10th of July is another event where we will sort of have members of the team on to give you some guidance. Again, thank you for the opportunity. Sam Hyde, I'm taking a bit through TTP.
Hi, so I'm Sam Hyde. So I've been in TTP for about 20 years. I don't know whether anyone knows the background to TTP, but I'll try and give you a quick essence of what we do and where we come from. So we've been in the village for 30 years, and we were founded in Melbourne Science Park in 1987, and have been there ever since. It's been our home. So essentially what we are is a bunch of scientists and engineers creating game-changing products for companies around the world. Some of them are the big multinationals you know of, like AstraZeneca, GSK, BP, all the way through to small startups that might spawn from the Cambridge area. Using our skills to create those products that have impact. Everything from connected inhalers, medical devices, insulin pumps, through to satellite phones, the next generation of internet themed products. That's kind of our what we do. We do it for our customers like BP and AstraZeneca, but also we're about creating our own technologies and also about creating our own businesses as well. And we've been building them at Melbourne Science Park, which has been our home for those 30 years. And it has been very critical to our success. We've had space where we can house these little startups, space where we can do these development projects. We've had systems making vaccines for curing flu. We've had combine harvesters where we've been doing vision systems so they can be automated. A whole bunch of stuff, and the park has been brilliant for us to be able to use the site flexibly. So today, over those 30 years, we've grown into a group of companies. So we're now called TTP Group. We are still employee and ex-employee owned, which is kind of critical for us. So I said, I've been there for 20 years, and one of the things we're very proud of is the fact that people do stay with us. And part of that is the employee ownership, the fact that we kind of do things for the long term for ourselves, but also for our employees, also for our environmental village. And I think we have very much enjoyed being part of the Melbourne Village. So we're a group of companies. Still at the heart is TTP PLC, which is the engine house of new technology. But also we have a number of spin-out businesses that have grown quite large on the park. So there is TTP LabTech that makes offices for instrumentation for life sciences, things that store compounds, people like GSK will have in their labs. We have a company called ToneJet, which is the next generation of digital printing technology, which is doing everything from removing the damage of plastics by allowing us to do more metal recycling, through to a new company which spun out called Ventus, which is doing micropumps for medical applications. So these companies are all housed on Melbourne Science Park. And Melbourne Science Park is also a company that's part of the group, so we own Melbourne Science Park. So before I hand over to David, just a question, why do we need to expand? Why is this ambition? Well, business has always been successful. We've always been a successful business. We've always been relatively conservative as a company, although we're doing very ambitious things technologically. We have never overstretched ourselves. But the business is growing quite massively. We're seeing some big demand, particularly around connected devices. We're seeing a big demand around all the life science sequencing, those kind of things, which are driving us to want to be able to do more work and need to do more work to fulfill these our customers. But also at the same time as the core engine house of TTP growing, our subsidiary companies, LabTech and TonJet, are also growing, taking on more staff, producing more products. So those companies tend to be more manufacturing based, so have a range of jobs. So all the companies need to grow, and we are struggling for space. So we need the facilities to house the people, we need the facilities to do the kind of work to continue to deliver what we can for the local economy and for more broadly. In terms of our vision is to expand the park that has been our home for all these years, to do it in a way that is consistent with our ethos as a business. So we've always lived sustainably within the local environment. We've always done things that are right for both us and a bunch of people, but also for the community around us. So I hope that you'll see that in the designs that they've done.
Hi,
and
that's the
news.
There's a TTP, for those of you who don't know. So, hello, I'm David Ardle, I'm partner at Shepherd Wilson. We're a London based practice. We have also the offices in Manchester and Glasgow. We are the fifth largest architectural practice in the UK, and we are the oldest architectural practice in the UK, 80 years old. Obviously, I've not been around that long, but we're fifth generation. So, we won this competition. Which was a two-stage competition probably late last year, and we spent about 4 or 5 months basically doing reviews to understand TTP, the company, the character of the company, the ethos and mentality, their connection with the town and the town itself. So this is not like a normal client that we would usually get, but a very special, interesting client with a very high ambition, but also a very grounded client. So we spent a very, very long time, much longer than usual, getting to know them so that we can be a bespoke solution for their requirements. So part of that, if I start running through these, as you know, this is the existing science park here. The buildings within the existing science park were designed as office buildings. They weren't really designed as science buildings, and they aren't really fit for purpose for the future of science is going forward. So, Sam has mentioned, this is Birchwood Fuels here, and the idea is to extend the existing science park into Birchwood Fuels for TTP. When we first came here, we did an analysis on the site to understand what the constraints on the site are, what the potential issues are, and concerns that you may have. So obviously, access is through the existing science park. There are some ecology issues within the site, so we have done ecology surveys to understand all the different types of habitat we have. We'll be looking to enhance those, and Charles will explain that in a bit more detail. We then also We know that the residential down here, there will be a concern about anything that can be seen from there, so we've tried to respond to that with the design as well. And also then we have sort of a dense vegetation along this side and this side here. So we've looked at what the key assets on the site are. We've tried to retain the key assets, enhance those within the character of a fringe of village development, with buildings which are of a village scale, but to deal with the flexibility and the brief of time bonds. So, well, this is going to, one of these is going to fall down. So the design that we have come to is probably the ninth iteration. So the way that we've developed the project has been, you know, we design a potential solution, we sit down with TTP, with the design team, we review that, we look at where it's working, where it's not working, and then we go back and we evolve it again. So we started off this project with one building. The building has become much more fragmented. It's now five buildings in response to the brief and also in response to some of the concerns that we felt, maybe your concerns about the size and scale of the development. So if I explain just on this, we have the Link Road that comes through from the existing science park. We then have parking, which is low density parking built into a woodland. And then beyond that, we have a building here which is called the Conference Building, which is a small circular building with a planted roof, which is for the client facing aspects of TTP. We then have the Forum Building, which is over here, which is another circular building which is compliant with a green roof, which is a forum for TTP and also sort of a food and beverage, which is a place that they can do large presentations and get together. We then have what is called the Hive, which is basically the working engine of TTP, which is where all the science happens. So that's office accommodation, and it's got laboratories inside it, and it has everything that you need to make those work. So team clients, meeting spaces, things like that. Then beyond that, we have a goods area, which is pushed away to the far corner of the site. And then we have a technology barn, which is a large flexible space for project work to be done in. So here are some sections which you can see afterwards, more detail to show how the buildings sit. The buildings are all single story, except for the two circular buildings at the front, which are inclined, but they have mezzanine at the far end part of the site. So they incline away like that and like that. Then what we've looked at is just in terms of the design strategy. If you remember this image down here, it shows where ecology habitats are. We're looking to enhance those corridors. The green parts on the edge of this are areas that we're looking to increase the amount of planting and density of trees to help shield the site. But we're not trying to hide it, we're not closing it, it doesn't have a fence around it. It's basically just a way to soften what you see. So that gives us the central part of the site where the development will mainly happen. And again, it's low density planting here with a woodland, sort of building up to higher areas which have a higher requirement of servicing to the area that's furthest away from the village. So if I then go on to access and parking, if I go to the pedestrian cycle access and the vehicle access, all of them come directly through the existing science park. Pedestrian cycle access goes, sorry, the wrong way around, this was a pedestrian cyclist vehicle. So the vehicles come through, the service vehicles go along the far boundary of the site and come up to the loading bay here, so they're as far away from this side as possible. We then have the vehicles for parking coming through like this, so the parking drops off quickly. We've got a second area for parking over here, which again means that we can retain a green buffer along this side of this side to keep anything away, so we can no measure and see anything will be mitigated by very heavy planting those fringes. Then we have the pedestrian access is segregated from the cars, so we keep them separate. It's a pedestrian orientated environment, and as soon as you come into the site here, so there will be traffic counter measures, the cars will be limited to a very low speed, and priority will be given to pedestrians. So pedestrians and cycles come along through the woodland area and then filter into the building through multiple front doors effectively. So this then gives you an impression about how that sits. It is seen as a TTP are a little bit like a kind of university. They have a campus feel, they're very collegiate, they're very horizontal hierarchy. So we wanted to kind of represent that within the building. So each one of the buildings has a very singular purpose in a way, and the landscape is seen something which is part of the building. So it's, the buildings aren't squashed into a corner with a lot of landscape around it, the landscape and the buildings that seem to be seen as together. And it's meant to feel like a campus of a collection of small buildings inside a landscape setting. The landscape setting is informal, it's not a very formal landscape, it's building on precedents that we have in Cambridge area. So this you can just sort of see here, these inclined buildings with the green roofs. Those green roofs are inclined so that when you look at the building, the green roofs effectively shield the buildings that are beyond them. So this green roof is shielding from that direction, and this one is shielding from this direction, and Cambridge Road to the south. And then we've got some sections here which you can come and take a look at afterwards to show you we're looking to change the levels within the site very subtly, so that if you're standing there looking towards the car park, for example, there will be sort of mounds of earth which we're going to show you. So the idea is you don't really see any cars. We have a very much sort of landscape orientated setting which has water features and stores. But I'll just introduce you to Giles, who is our fantastic landscape designer, who will take you through the landscape and the project.
Thanks very much, David. My name's Giles Schultz, I'm a landscape architect on the project, and I think David's actually sort of set out that sort of introduction to the landscape. I suppose the kind of the key sort of strategy on this is creating a kind of a naturalistic environment here. It's sort of very sensitive to the location, the environment, and the views in and the site and the views out of the site. So our first sort of exercise really was just sort of getting to know the site, getting to know the local context from a landscape perspective, and understanding the kind of typologies and understanding the different landscapes that are in the area, and thinking that we just want to work with that typology and help integrate these buildings, as David said, almost into the parkland setting, so that it's a kind of a seamless transition between the landscape and its wider context and the buildings within it. So, I mean, that sketch at the top kind of gives you a bit of an overall perspective, kind of looking from southwest across. So the principal landscape types really were sort of the open meadow based on sort of chalk land that's in the area, the woodlands and groups of woodlands, so not sort of necessarily massive woodlands, but groups of trees and woodlands, and then the waterscape, which is really an opportunity to create sort of ecology, create visual interest, and also to deal with the management of water across the site. So running through each of those things, I suppose the intention was, particularly on the southwestern boundary, if I refer to here, we've got quite a number of existing trees here. And we're looking to retain all of those trees. Quite a lot of those are actually off the site. Some of them, we have got trees on the site there. We're looking to retain all of the best quality trees. We're looking to enhance all of that with additional tree planting. Within the car park area, as Dave mentioned, the idea is to create sort of more sort of a country park style where you've got parking within a woodland setting. So these, not really a kind of a, what you'd imagine as a sort of a sea of tarmac with little trees and lots of park and leisure substantial areas we've got planted in that to really break that up visually so that it sort of softens that whole approach to the site. We've had, as Steve mentioned, a number of ecology surveys, and that's an ongoing process, so we understand everything was there, we work with that, and we've got on this potential generally to enhance the whole of this from the landscape and the ecology perspective. It's relatively barren in the sense of what's there, it's just an open field for each person, lots of new planting, lots of new opportunities to enhance the ecology. Then within, around the front of the building here, is that sort of wetland area, and there we've got a series of ponds and pools which will deal with water attenuation and also provide visual amenity and opportunities for habitat creation within those. Then to the north of the site, which is the sort of more open aspect there, which we're creating sort of more of informal recreation areas. So this isn't formal recreation, but it's more of a space where events could be held, where now sort of kickabouts, general sort of informal gathering, places to sit, and picnic. One of the features which we put in through this is a trim trail, which is going around the site and right the way through the whole of the existing science park. That's an opportunity to have sort of a health and wellbeing aspect to this, the ecology aspect enhancements. So there's a series of little events and trim trail exercise equipment around that. So it gives people the opportunity to go and have a bit of informal recreation or after working out, I should say. I think that's broadly it. So really it is, like I say, it's key things, really working with the local landscape typologies and integrating these buildings within into that landscape setting in a very informal and sort of low-key fashion that we think so within the whole spirit of TTP. So I was going to take you through each one of the different buildings that we have on the site now so that you understand the design, the architecture, and why those are all being created. First of all, we have the Hive, which is the main building, which is this building here, which is the one that I set up. Contains all the hard work and stuff, the science, and there's some people here there doing their design stuff. We've got through the briefing process when we got to know TTP, we kind of started to understand how they work, which is very, very unusual. They have lots of different projects which happen at the same time. And some of them expand, some of them contract, some of them might expand together. But this is happening inside this building all the time. You never know where it's going to happen, but you know it will happen. And so the strategy that we came up with was to try to build it would allow for all these required flexibility without meaning that the building has to be reconfigured too much. So it's a kind of a loose fit, very flexible plan where you can expand or contract in two directions. It's a single story building, which is just one level all the way across the site. So it is 4.5 meters high at the front. It's a very deep building, so it's about 60 meters deep, and it's quite a long building, about 100 meters. That long building and the low building means that when we slide those modules back and forth, we create a sort of step edge, which means that it's more like a distribution warehouse where you see one big wall. You see small edges and small corners. And again, that's a strategy to try and break up the size of this building, which is quite large, over one story, maximizing the flexibility of the views to the landscape. So there's a couple of views up here just to show you how that sits. And then retain the existing movement in the centre and we'll enhance that as well. That was kind of our lot. So that existing movement is here and the building sits behind that and that sort of thing. The second building is the second and third buildings are the goods in area for the technology barn, which is a large story and a half barn, which is, as you can see on the plan here. Now, this has nothing in it. This is basically a project space for projects that we don't know yet, but we know will happen. So if, for example, there's a combine harvester, which is to learn how to drive itself and other science things, only scientists, then that would be done in here. So the larger stuff is all kept to the back of the site up here. The sensitive stuff, which is built into the landscape, is all kept to the south. Where the laboratories are, which is up to the top here, the servicing for the laboratories is on the ground, and there's a little bit on the roof, but it's all kept as far away, so that's basically any air conditioning that would be required to support the laboratories. Just a little note on the sustainability side, this is a highly sustainable building we're looking to minimise air conditioning building, so it's maximising lots of fresh air coming into it. Doesn't have lots of air conditioning on the roof, so they're not planned for the very good. We're going to use the water features to assist it with cooling and cooling, so we're trying to make it a little like that. But it's a very simple, clean, modular approach to the design. It's not too fussy.
again, just to try and give the building a democratic feel, which is very much like the TTP work. You know, the corridor all the way around the outside of the building, for example, to even nobody gets put into the corridor. So it's kind of quite loose, quite open, very collegiate. There's lots of little buildings inside of our large building. So, if I go on to the next. So, now we have the forum building, which bounces over here. The forum building is this one here. So, this building has been designed to accommodate a group gathering of lots of people in TTP. It's a different type of workplace setting, so all the hard, busy stuff that happens in the main building is going to be quite intense. It's quite a big building with lots of activities, so if you want to go and have a large presentation and just decompress from all of that activity that's happening, you then come to this building here, which is two stories high at the front and zero stories high at the back, so it bends and sits into the ground, with green roof put up over the top, as you can see here. So the grass and the landscape lift up onto the roof, and it opens up facing away towards the main building. So the glass that you see in isolation is looking in that direction there. The building has a series of fins around the outside. Those fins are being tuned so that the glass that you can see from outside also work to shade the glass and provide a really good sustainability level for us, because we don't have to go over painting. So it's not a little glass box, but it's a much more complicated building with a series of solid figures taken on the view. As you sit in the middle of this, you can see out, but if you look at it from the outside, again, those things will work to bring the building up. So when you get to the edges of it, it becomes more solid. So again, it's about screening what you see from outside, but also maximizing the sort of view and connection from the inside. So we have as the roof lifts up, there are a series of louvers that will sit on the outside, which we're still evolving at the moment. Those work in tandem with these vertical thin walls to provide maximum sustainability and sort of shading to the glass in the building, minimizing the amount of energy that we need, also reducing the amount of visible glass that you can see from the outside. And if we go on to the conference building. Conference building is almost the same on the outside as the forum building. It is the one on the approach. So that's this one here, or plan is this one. So visitors will come in and they will go into this building, but they can't access these buildings unless invited, because obviously there's quite a lot of sensitive work that happens in there. So they will come into that building from the back. This image is a bit small, that's what we're looking at afterwards. This shows you how that green roof lifts up. And you enter into it, okay, and again, you will get the panoramic view out onto the landscape. But we're using the same sort of fins around the outside, sort of shading on the top, to minimize the amount of sun that will hit the building, reduce the amount of energy. Because this building is orientated in a different direction, the fins on the top on the wall will be different to the other one, so it's doing slightly different jobs. So the architecture of the outside space will be tuned to accommodate different sun positions and minimize energy. And again, that sort of shows how that is. It addresses the landscape front of us. And thank you very much. If you have any questions, please.
Okay, thank you. Do any of the other presenters just want to add anything else that may have occurred to them before we go on to the question session? No? Right. So the way it will work is we'll take questions from councillors, and I will include District Councillor Councillor Hales at the end of that bit, and then there will be a public session, which will be 15 minutes in total and 3 minutes per person, so we'll have that at the end. Excuse me. So, first of all, questions from councillors. Can you stick your arm out like this, because otherwise I won't be able to see you. Councillor Travis.
A very basic question. How many jobs are on the line with this development? And how many vehicles do you anticipate will be entering the village as a result?
Sure. So we're looking, the increased capacity of this building is 400. Part of that is us relocating the core bit of TTP over to this building and then expansion of that. And part of that will be existing subsidiary companies like LabTech expanding into that space. So a total of 400 new jobs, some of which will be our corporate groups around, you know, scientists and engineers, but others will be more manufacturing jobs from, you know, procurement through to, you know, shop floor type stuff. In terms of traffic, we've done quite a bit of survey work in terms of people who come to TTP. There's a high proportion compared to normal companies who cycle. We've been an advocate of getting the cycle path to Cambridge, and we're also an advocate of trying to get better routes into Royston. While quite a few of our staff live in Melbourne, obviously a lot of them live in other parts and they access by cars. So currently I think it's 70% by car, is that right? 80% by car. So we envisage that similar stats, an extra 400, 8% of which would come by car. So I think, we're honest, there will be an increase of traffic coming down to this point here. Most of the traffic does not go through the village. And one of the strategies and planning is, first of all, although it's not within our gift, we would like to propose that we do the 30-mile-an-hour zone back earlier in the entranceway. And that will affect not just the 800 or so cars coming into Melbourne Science Park, it will affect thousands of cars that come in to the village every day through that route. The other thing is we're proposing that we will give our staff instruction on the preferred route out of the village to avoid them coming through the village. And the last thing we'll do also is we've looked at the statistics and there's a bit of a peak around 5:30. So we're looking at changing working practices to try and blur that peak to avoid a peak level.
Just
to
add a couple of words to that, as Ralph taking those transport guide, we'll sort of think of any detailed questions on that. What we did, we've got 460 staff at the group at the moment, and we did a survey of all those staff, because that would be typical of the work profile after the event. And we had a 75% return on that questionnaire, and that's where we're getting the statistics from. So it's not from a book, it's from actually asking our own staff where you come from, how you get to work. And that is all the answers. This is Ralph.
Yes, we did a travel behaviour survey, and we ran for 2 weeks. Existing travel habits, distribution of staff, so where they live, where they're coming from, attitudes towards transport, and general behaviour questions surrounding staff times, end times, local transport, that sort of thing. From that, we use that information to perform a transport assessment, which will expand the trip generation as well by cars and or modes. That will be based on the transport assessment, will be based on overall data, and then travel planning measures will be used to seek to minimise or reduce the number of car trips coming to the site, which will be taken into account in the assessment.
Can I ask a second? I think one of the concerns that people will have about the transport, and I understand what you're saying about a lot of the traffic coming off of the A10 from that end of the village rather than through the village, but the village itself is very congested and people get very concerned about anything which adds to that congestion. And you know, I just wondered whether in your internal survey whether you asked the question of the people, which way do they travel into the village? Do they travel in from the A10 or do they come in through the village? Because that would be very interesting.
We didn't specifically ask that question, but from looking at our postcode locations, we can map the staff routes, the shortest routes, because for a given home location, we might have more than one option of route. So we've looked at that post-price proportion split between the types of routes. And the transport assessment will include an assessment.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you. Okay. More questions from councillors? Councillor Kilmorey.
During the landscaping, there was a comment about keeping all trees, which was then corrected to keeping quality trees. What is a quality tree?
Well, we have, on the first, as well as the Ecology Survey, one of the very first surveys we did was a tree survey. So that categorises all of the trees from A plus, which is a tree that you definitely want to keep if you possibly can, right down to unclassified ones. And it's basically the classification, it's all carried out by one of our cultures, basically categorise the trees with the value that they provide in their likely lifetime from where they are now. So we don't want to lose any trees that have got further contribution to make, because obviously that's part of the environment that we're trying to recover. And indeed, there's a group of birch trees in the centre of the site which we've located the building specifically so that that's what we're trying to retain, those trees. So I think the intention is there where we can. There will inevitably be some areas where we're going to lose some trees, but and there always are, but I think the overall impact and enhancement is going to be a considerable enhancement.
I was just concerned that quality might be a variable thing dependent on where the tree is.
No, there's a science to it.
Part of my cynicism.
That's part of the reason why we move buildings around and change from the science so much. As the survey starts to come in, we're starting to understand the detail of where the ecology quality lay, where flood was, etc., etc. That's when the building started to move and modify itself to move the building.
I don't know if this helps, but one of the reasons why we really like Melbourne, it's been our home for 30 years, is that staff actually love being here. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons they love being here is they're in a setting which has got trees and some greenery in there, so it's in our interest really to keep as much of it as we can, because that's what they enjoy. It's all about getting staff to retain the staff. We want to do our best.
Thank you.
Councillor Clark. As you expand, and clearly you are expanding, a very quick rate. How much of your research work is going to involve chemical products?
Very little work involves chemical products. So we're doing most of it's technology, which is electronics, physics, lasers, imaging systems. There's a small amount that includes biology. So we're developing new diagnostics for flu, things like that. Of those things that are of that type, they're all held within classified type labs. So it's not a question of chucking stuff out through vents, that's not allowed. We don't do substantial chemical processing, so we're not putting any significant extract at all into the lab.
Okay.
Councillor Hart, thank you. Thank you for taking time and sharing the information with us. I'm very much a visual learner, so I've enjoyed looking at things like that. But I'm just wondering, should your planning application be successful, what is your timeline? Because I'm mindful of how much development potentially is happening in the village, and obviously the concern about the amount of traffic and the amount of vehicles that are actually involved in development. So I'm just wondering, what sort of timing are you thinking?
So we'll come back to how we might approach development. We have an urgent need. I won't pretend we don't. So we are struggling to find space on the park at the moment. We're already looking at other sites that we can borrow temporarily, which is including everything for the village. But it's a struggle, and those are not going to work for us longer term. So we do have an urgent timeline. The reality is that even with the best case scenario, we're looking at 2 years from planning before we occupy. But we would look to move as soon after we get planning permission to start with the construction process. Do anyone want to comment on how we manage the construction process?
So part of the method of construction is something that we look at in terms of how many vehicles we require. We're going to try and prefabricate the off-site where we can, where it's appropriate. So now we'll reduce the amount of vehicles that we can. There'll be a construction management plan to do something to look at to demonstrate how the contractor will be delivered, where we can deliver and that will negotiations with yourself. It's fair to say, I think that quite a lot of the work is within the site, is enabling works and moving things around. The building itself, the words, it's got a large plan, it's got lots of different materials, it's incredibly repetitive. So the idea is that raw materials that come to site will be as minimal as possible, but it is a building, it will be a construction site. But how the construction vehicles would access the site will be something we need to agree with you as well. The idea, obviously, it wouldn't be coming through the village to get to the site, that would be dictated by the contractor and would be imposed by us.
What we have, and not taking anything for granted, is have a word with some contractors to see how will you approach this, how long do you take it, what traffic would it involve. So we're doing, as well what the consultant team are doing, we're asking the contractor as well as how they would build it, because sometimes a slightly different approach depending on which way you go. So we've got enough information to pass on the process.
Thank you. I've got a couple then. Can you tell us how you decided how many car parking places to include?
I believe that's regulated.
Yes, it's set out in South Cambridgeshire planning policy for the maximum provision. And that's being looked at in the context of the future generation of the site as well to make sure the two are aligned. So that we stand with that.
I do have a reason for asking, because I can't quite remember when it was, but at some point last year the parish clerk was approached and asked whether TTP could have sort of dedicated use of some of the car parking spaces in the village car park. And we said no, because as you are aware, we've got a lot of other development going on.
I think that was
AstraZeneca. Oh, I do beg your pardon.
They're on our site.
They're on your site. Yes,
it was one of our tenants who was asked that question.
But you can see where I'm coming from, that I'm thinking that if there is pressure for car parking on the current site, from the village's point of view, this would actually be an opportunity. I understand that there are specifications laid down by South Cairns, but from our point of view, would you consider putting more in order to alleviate any parking problems on the current site?
I think we will aim to get the maximum car parking space that we are allowed to do, bearing in mind the need to make it in a woodland setting and to make sure it's sympathetic to the environment. But we will do it to the maximum. Our ambition is that more people cycle. Our ambition is that more people take public transport, insofar as it actually runs. you'll share your amusement. But we will look for the maximum parking.
The other thing is that there's a business case that goes with this where equipment will have to have a number of workplaces that may go up to the maximum number over a number of years. Mm-hmm. So the number of cars will migrate very slowly from the existing building population up to where it will be eventually. And what we find in lots of other projects we're working on is that people's habits are changing very quickly. So over the next sort of period of time, people's, especially millennials and people that are coming through, their view on using cars is very different to dinosaurs and like me. So I imagine that, as we look at parking right now, I think that in 10 years' time, people will view parking something differently, and building capacity probably won't be there yet. So there will be a surplus of parking on day one to alleviate the problem like that. And I think that over time, there will be a migration of how people cars and
to that point, one of the things we are doing in the new site, because our target recruitment is millennials, and we're competing with Cambridge, if we're honest. The urban environment in central Cambridge has an allure for the millennials, but by providing better facilities for the cycles, actually to make it more comfortable to get to work by a bike, is what we're trying to achieve. And that includes continuing to support the improvement of the cycleways, both from Cambridge and to Worcester.
My second question, I suppose, is about what are these 400 people, extra people, going to do for the village? do you provide cafes, shops and things on site, or is there potentially a pool of 400 people who will come and use the facilities in the village?
So a couple of things. So the growth is partly the TTP people moving across and growing into the 400, and part of that will be the other subsidiary companies in TTP Group that have taken ownership also growing. So there's a few things. First of all, jobs. Actually, although the TTP thing is mostly scientists and engineers, the other businesses are more diverse in terms of what they're looking for. So jobs for local everybody is a key part. In terms of, I've just been to Melbourne Village College, going to the gym. We use the facilities in the village because there's no point replicating. While we will have a restaurant as part of this and another cafe, you will always see people walking down the high street during lunchtime because they don't want to go there, they don't want to go for a walk. Mm-hmm. I use the barbers, the road. I like Wright's best garden machinery shop in the area, Urban Classics. Most of us are keen DIYers, so you know we're using all the shops in the area, and we'll continue to do that. I guess the most critical one probably is for everyone's jobs. We are looking to provide a diverse range of jobs.
Okay, so it won't just be for graduates.
No. The people we find hardest to find and attract are the high performing science engineering graduates. You've got Apple, you've got Google, you've got all these people in Cambridge now who are hoovering these people in. So we've got to compete with those people. But what our business model has always been about this sort of engine house of TTP, but then the spin-out businesses that become more manufacturing oriented. So they have a set of number of products, they grow those businesses, and they become much more diverse in terms of the recruitment profile. So it's not just the manual scientists and engineers. It's everything from purchasing to shop floor to marketing to whatever. It's a much more diverse range of jobs, and that, you know, is beneficial for all.
I suppose what I was trying to get at was not so much the diverse range but the diverse levels of qualification.
Yes.
Whether there would be something for someone at whatever point they come out of the educational system.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, absolutely. We are keen to help that. So we are very involved with the local education, so sponsorship of Melbourne Village College for maths teachers, but also Launchpad in Cambridge for sixth level model, just trying to encourage people. But you know, not everyone's roots in academic groups. We do apprenticeships within the company, and you know, that's great.
Thank you. District Councillor Hales.
I was surprised actually, I think it was you who stayed on and said you only got 75% response to the traffic survey. Is that within the company? That's employees. Question begs, prior to you submitting your traffic survey from my to South Camps, I just wonder whether if you were running it again to get being positive and assuming that consent is given, you're looking at, I'd love to say this is the actual 13 weeks because it's commercial and it's going through the system, but you're looking potentially at the back end of this year if you were to submit in the next 4 or 5 weeks to have your permission if that was the case. At what point would you start? Immediately? I'm hoping.
Start on construction?
The whole project to start. Forget, assuming you get your permission in back end of November.
There's various scenarios depending on how it's procured, but it's something programmed at the moment to be out to tender in May next year, and be on site in September. We're looking at bringing that forward because there's operational reasons, for my rights, as to why we want to grow forward. So that's one of the reasons we're talking to contractors now, is there any way to do this quicker without being silly about it? Because if you force something, if you get the wrong product, but you've got a definite intention
The worst case we're looking at the moment is starting construction in September next year, so September 2019, and there will be a two-year build cycle, so 2021. We hope to bring it back and start earlier in 2019 on construction, but it depends on contractors. So the detailed design we can run in parallel with the contractor, or we can do the detailed design on our own and then appoint the contractor. So those are the options that the team are thinking about.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You mentioned, Sam, the potential for the your gift of traffic calming issues and scenarios through the use of a capital drug.
Yes.
It is one of the actual biggest complaints from people, certainly in that area, was the further use of the village, the speed of vehicles coming into the village itself. Don't seem to notice the 30 or the 40. They're still doing 40 plus by the time they get to your eye and your junction. So, with that in mind, assuming that all is well with the planet, when would you think it would be favourable for the village to perhaps bring those works forward with regards to the traffic calming?
I think that would be favourable to do whether or not we get planning permission or not. But that's not within our gift, actually. This is a plan. I mean, there's a small amount of money involved that we'd be happy to fund, but it's actually something for the various councils to try and push forward.
I think Ralph might correct me, but I think it's 278 agreement there with local county highways, so that could really be done, no problem. We'll worry about that.
Yeah,
but we can talk about it afterwards.
Any sort of speed limit reductions or works like that would need to be viewed as a whole package of measures.
Sure. There is a discussion at the moment, as I understand it, with Shepherd Parish Council. It's part of the county trail in Shepherd Parish Council. It's not remote. So I'm hoping there's going to be negotiation there. So that might be something you might like to join in on, perhaps. I think I've already mentioned this to you, Sam, and I know we've already the answer is now. In fact, you mentioned biotech and what have you. There may be people who are concerned about what we're going to be doing in those labs.
Yeah.
And are any of those labs, I don't know what the right phrase is, but negative pressure, so you keep whatever you're doing inside the lab, something like that.
So the labs are all done to proper standards, so they can. I mean, first of all, we're not a manufacturing site for the new building. We are an R&D site. We don't work with highly toxic materials. Where we do work with materials that are bio in nature, generally they're all filtered and at negative pressure, so it pulls all the stuff in. And if even if actually you took all our labs and you let it all go out, it would be safe.
And the final question for the moment is a beauty, we love this. In the village we've had some fairly extensive development trust upon over the last couple of years. And as a result of that, the parish council commissioned work with Andrew Walter to test the sewer system, because we were convinced that the sewer system wasn't man enough to take all the development we were being saddled with. They agreed to do it, and they were surprised themselves as the result, which was the 199 hours of ground treatment on it, which means no house can be occupied until the sewer system is upgraded. 450 people, give or take, is around about the equivalent of 100 houses. About 100 houses, if you look at their equivalent sewage going into the system. It's not anything that I would say from a technical point of view, but I would be really grateful in your workup when you go into planning if that conversation could be had with Andy Walter to make sure that there's no undue stress.
That's already been implemented, that discussion's in hand.
Superb. On that note,
okay, thank you. Other questions from councillors now? No? Anything occurred to anyone else? No? Right, in that case, the next agenda item is PC4918, and that's to note the dates of a planned public exhibition in respect of the above proposals, and I think someone said earlier it's the 10th of July. so the one day.
Yes.
Lovely, thank you very much. And then PC 5018 is the public participation session. So, as I said, a total of 15 minutes and 3 minutes per person. So, yes, Ms. Burke.
Right, we've had access both to the construction and for that to be through the existing salad part, through the car park, and then out across there.
Through this route and onto the site.
All the heavy stuff.
Question. So, transport access.
Can we do one question at a time?
Which at the present time is the access it can have to the Lewis Fields. So if we have to be at the gates at the end, what is going to happen with that?
We don't own the drift, you just got rights of access along. The owner of the drift is the gentleman who owns these fields. We are not using that as a vehicle or access at all. It's not part of our intention. Our intention is to go cut across from there. We are looking at ways of construction access other than that. And I have asked the gentleman there as to whether we can go in through there to explore for these, because we don't want to put anything through there if we can possibly help it, particularly in your case. We are looking at other ways of trying to resolve that.
But we certainly would not be going this way. We are in negotiation and we've got agreement in principle to access across the drift this direction. So we have the rights to get across to do this. They're fully aware of the plans of this. And as you said, we are looking for alternatives that might get the traffic off the road sooner. But that is subject to that landowner agreeing for us to do a temporary road on there to get the power purpose is that because it keeps the park it exits the village sooner just as it comes in. We can't force their hand. Obviously they've just been a huge planning.
Something today there was a very large loads of coming down there again.
We're going to be using moat deck.
Well, you will. It's coming past our house every day. You may or may not know this, but you're getting in there down Drift Road.
Quite large vehicles.
Oh, for the agricultural, that's with the that's the survey work here. Yes, probably.
Yeah, but your vehicles, you said.
No,
you
didn't meet you. I apologise. Yeah, I apologise. Okay,
next question, please.
Yeah.
Okay. Lady at the front. I'll work backwards.
Yeah. My husband and I own one of the two properties adjacent to the lane, which is on
right next to
your new car park.
So we've got that one there.
Yes.
And our neighbour's here, obviously the second. Our concern is what happens to that lane? Is that going to be incorporated into the car park in the field, or are you going to maintain that?
Immediately behind the house.
The length of our garden.
Right, we own that. It's part of our red line application boundaries. We are not doing anything with that. That is access to the land of back.
It's a right of access. There is a right of access. Although we own the plot in white here, there is a right of access along that for this land here.
Which so we know vehicle access through that.
Not for us, there is a right of access for this field there. And there would be a gap of.
So we've got to go a 15 metre margin from the site boundary to the edge of anything which would have a car and which would have been planted. So that margin is the one that you see here runs along there, and which has a good path for the cycle path going through. But effectively, that edge there for several times is as far away from
the edge.
So you have the road that you're talking about, which is the access road through, which is access just to the edge of the field. Then there's
margin which goes across the building line, so it will be quite substantial. From here to the other side, I suppose.
The other question I have is, if you're having a conference centre, this 400 people is going to increase the population.
So when we say conference centre, what we mean is, so our business is helping clients, you know, like a GSK or a BP. So we have meetings with them on site. So maybe one person in a car comes once a month for a meeting, or once every 2 months. It's not time, it's not big delegates and whatever else, no. It's just
not going to be 7 day
a week. No, absolutely not. Can't believe in the work life balance thing. And so while our labs are open, I think the footfall is a couple of people on the weekend. So, and certainly not clients.
Thank you. The next one, sorry, did the lady next to you want to ask a question? Sorry, you're waiting and see. Sorry, the gentleman with the glasses.
Yes, my house backs onto your Soviet style two gates to which you are getting access. The road that you are proposing to build into the new science park, which is going to have 400 people, including an indeterminate number of cars, all your construction and traffic, to build this wonderful complex, where is this road going through? Because I back on to these steel gates. Are you going to use those steel gates as the road? Or
no.
Is the,
no.
Is it, are you going further down?
You're going further away from you.
Beyond the sort of two very, very tall trees.
And then through my
but how do you get across Drift Road?
It's straight across, so it's further away from where you build the next.
It's further up from the steel gate.
Yeah.
And what we've tried to
where do is put the sort of tape at the moment.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, next question.
So, the length of time do you suppose that this will take to finish the whole project? Not, I'm not talking about when you even start, but how long do you suspect it would all take to create this new
product? So I guess from a business perspective, we need it ASAP. So we're going to be putting pressure on the contractors to do it quickly, as long as we can do it also safely and coherently. And with that requirement, I think we're looking at 2 years from starting digging to occupying. Okay. Yeah. So obviously in that time there'll be certain initially land, mostly on site, but people moving land earth around. But then there'll be a period of lorries coming on with stuff. And there'll be a period where actually there's not many lorries, but there are people on site doing stuff. But we currently visit that from start digging to occupying in 2 years.
Yes, and during this time there's going to be lots of vehicles coming through the village to access the science park, through the science park into this.
So that's the question. So yes, obviously the type of vehicles will vary during that.
Sure.
But yes, and that's why we're looking at whether we can get an alternative route or whether we have to go through the middle of the science park.
Okay, so you might have two routes therefore in possibly.
Or we might just use, if we have that route, we will demand that route used. Because we don't want it. I mean, we're going to be working on this park. So we've got our own companies, we've got tenants on this park. We have an obligation to keep it viable for them. So we want to minimise the traffic there. But if we don't have a route through there, that will be the sole route through.
Yeah. So the one you just pointed to is the one you are going to start with, and possibly you might need to create another route.
Yeah. So we will, if we can't get this route, if we can't get agreement from the landowner, we will use this route.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Other questions?
Oh, sorry. Are you looking to perhaps buy the whole of Drift Road eventually?
if Drift Road was available, we probably would have sourced, purchased it.
And is Countrywide Profit still involved in all this?
I believe so. They have access to that.
It's Countryside Properties involved. Yes. It's Countrywide is the estate agents who have got financial problems.
You've got the wrong country.
There's Countrywide and Countryside.
Yes.
Countryside Properties are the ones that are involved in this site.
Okay.
They're fine, they say, well, Countrywide are the estate agents who back properly to their area.
They're not going to mind.
They're taking customers.
Okay, thank you.
We've got an interest in buying soon the land between our property and what we've already purchased. There are two paddocks there, right at the back of our garden, which are absolutely disgraceful, neglected.
These two, yeah.
Yes.
They were excluded from the sale once we tried to buy them.
Yes.
Well, our original bid did include it. For whatever reason, they excluded
it.
They've not told us that.
But that was what we understood when you were telling us that you were buying the land. And I said, you know, don't worry about it, because they have agreed to maintain those two paddocks.
I think they were telling you porcupines. But yes, we would be interested in acquiring that land, but it's not. It was removed from the water line.
So I'm just going for it's not sure you finished. Are you hoping eventually perhaps to buy Old Drift Road, the whole Drift Road?
So not, I mean, our interest would be the connecting slot between the two. We suspect that's never going to be for sale. If it was for sale, we would look to acquire it.
Yeah.
But it's not. We have trouble. So our understanding is that, as you know, there's an application for this area here, and part of the purpose of maintaining access along there is a pedestrian pathway.
And they're going to cross.
So our agreement with them is that we will have a road cross, their pedestrian also have a priority.
Okay.
So there's a negotiation going on there about how that would work. It may be that never gets built, and that path is actually ineffective anyway for access. So it may need to let go of that sometime.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sorry, gentleman siding.
Will it have any effect on the water table in the area?
No. In terms of water runoff attenuation, all of the runoff that will be created from the buildings will be attenuated on the site. So it will be no impact beyond the site to change whatsoever.
Okay, any other questions from the public? No? Right, 2 minutes and 38 seconds, District Councillor Hales.
2 points. You talk about the drift and with access from the potential site of the countryside are interested. Is that going to cause you any issues with regards to the members of the public basically walking across what would be deemed to be a private area?
It's a situation we prefer not to have, but it's the design of the road will cater for that actual crossing point. I don't know how many people would actually use that, even in the scenario that's been developed beyond us, to be honest.
Are you talking about during construction, or are you talking about after construction?
Well, yeah, but in the original countryside plan, so that was going to be the panacea for the sustainability of people walking and cycling into the centre of the village. So from the countryside point of view, the 150 or 160 houses they intending to build there, times that many people will all be coming across your front door, because that is the best thing. So that was my point, was does that give you an issue with people walking up and down within the site, across the site?
I don't think we have an issue. We've never had a closed site. We've always had, there's obviously a fence around parts, but the site entrance is always open, and we don't see a difference with this site being open. So I don't see that as an issue. Obviously, safety, how you create junctions where you've got vehicle traffic and pedestrians, you need to think about that. So we probably have to agree what is safe and reasonable, and that's part of the negotiations ongoing, how we do that junction.
Okay. Anyone else? No. In that case, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. I declare the meeting closed.